Okay, says we're recording. It's good to see all of you here. We do have visitors. We're certainly thankful for your presence. We are in the middle of a family study focusing on husband and wife relationship. So just for a little bit of review, and maybe for the benefit of anybody who may listen to this recording, because I did have several people ask me about last week's, we'll do a quick review, and then we'll pick up and hopefully finish this lesson today. So we talked about the fact that this is somewhat of an unusual topic that has been addressed over time, and we're talking about intimate love in the husband-wife relationship. And so we talked about the fact that intimate love isn't just sex. There's more to it. And we talked about the idea that you have to have the caring and affectionate love within this relationship for this to achieve the potential that God intended. Okay, it's not just about the physical act of sexual relations between a husband and a wife. There's more involved. But that's primarily what we're focusing on in this lesson. And so we talked about how, unfortunately, in our society, ideas are so warped. And we ask, you know, where did you learn about sex? Did you learn from, hopefully, from your a parent in a Christian manner, or did you learn from society and the warped ideas that are out there today? Unfortunately, our culture does not have a healthy attitude towards sex. And I don't think anybody here would question that as time goes by, it just gets worse. And so we need to go back and focus on what God-inspired ideas are about this relationship between a husband and a wife. So we will pick up, we were actually in Proverbs chapter 5. And we had read verses 15 through 23, and we had talked about Solomon's advice. We'll just reread it. Starting in verse 15, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them only be your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times, and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman, and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. And so we had looked at the specific phrases in here and the idea of being intoxicated. And that's not a term that we typically use in a positive manner, right? We typically think of intoxicated and it has a negative connotation. But in this passage, the Holy Spirit is encouraging the idea of being intoxicated with this relationship. It should be a positive. It should be what you think of someone being drunk, of how happy they are to partake in what God has ordained in the husband-wife relationship. We talked a little bit about the word ravished. So in summary, this is the attitude a man is encouraged to have toward his wife. You should be able to fulfill the God-given sexual desires in this relationship. And that's true for the woman as well, not just the man. You should be able to engage in this type. It's not evil. It's not bad, as so much of history tried to make sex guilty. There was guilt associated with it. It was only for procreation. It wasn't something, it was almost a necessary evil, but that's not the way God made it. That's not the way he intended it. Now, in this passage, he gives two reasons that you should fulfill your desires in this relationship. If you look in verse 20, and we've talked about this, the idea of getting married is not simply to prevent fornication or adultery. That's not the only reason to get married. Unfortunately, some people have been told, or some people hold the idea, yeah, the only reason we had to get married is so we could have sex. That's a bad idea if that's the only reason you're getting married. But in verse 20, he does say, if you fulfill this desire within the relationship, you won't have the temptation to go elsewhere. And we're gonna take a look at that here in just a minute. But that is one thing, that if you have a healthy sexual relationship within your marriage, you will by far be less tempted to go outside the marriage. And conversely, if this is not a healthy relationship, you will be more tempted, right? And then the other reason in verse 21 through 23 is we know that there is punishment for sexual misconduct from God, right? We'll look over at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. I think Sean pointed out this passage last week, but I'll take a look at it. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. In verse 16, verse 16. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, shall become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. I believe this is the Gnostic argument that Paul is presenting here. And his reply is, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. So we know that the healthy relationship helps to prevent adultery, and it also prevents any penalty that we incur by sexual misconduct from God. So just to make this analogy a little more clear, it gets hot here in the summer, right? You work outside, I tend to sweat, you get thirsty. So let's assume it's a hot summer day and you're outside working. And someone walks out with a cold glass of water. And you really want that glass of water because you're really thirsty. And we're using the same type of water imagery that's used in this passage, just in a different manner. And so they hold that cold glass of water. And they hold it right next to you. But they won't let you drink. You have an instinct to want that water. But they hold it right there in front of you, but you just can't have it. It's the same idea with our own natural sexual desires. We have the ability to satisfy them, to drink. And yet if they're withheld, you're going to find that drink somewhere else. Okay, now we're going to get even to more dicey territory. When we're talking about sexual desire, does it affect men or women based on the conduct and dress of the opposite sex? It does, right? It does. I mean, if it didn't, they wouldn't use it in advertising. How often do you see advertising that has nothing to do with the product, and yet there's someone in a bathing suit or a bikini or a guy with ripped muscles wearing just his shorts? And you're like, what does that have to do with that? So we know that it does, right? Marketers have known it for years. They generate revenue based off sex. It's one of the most powerful advertising tools out there. And so for the idea for people to say, well, I can wear what I want, and if you're looking at me in a certain way, well, that's on you. That's on you. You're a pervert. And we see it with, I mean, just in my time, the standards of dress and conduct in America have gotten even worse. And I know people were saying that back when I was a kid, how bad it was. And so what's next? I don't know, but I doubt there's going to be a return to decency. I would only imagine that it's going to get worse. So if we look at a biblical example, what caused David to have feelings for Bathsheba originally? He saw her bathing on the rooftop, right? I don't think she was fully clothed. If you remember the occasion where Herodias came and danced for the king, what I based on everything you can read about in that passage, I would infer that it was not a, she wasn't square dancing. Right? And it moved him to do what? Whatever you want. Whatever you want. Based on her dancing. Now, are men the only ones that are visual? And I know women are going to be like, why are you talk about the men? No, we do have an example. What caused, and now I'm not talking specifically about illicit behavior, but why did Jacob love Rachel initially? Because she's beautiful. And why didn't he love Leah originally? She wasn't. She wasn't a pretty girl. Now, why did, conversely, why did Potiphar's wife like Joseph? Because he was handsome. He's a good-looking guy. And so while we may make the stereotype, and we've talked a little bit about this before, that men are more visual, and that may or may not be true, I tend to believe that just in general, men are more visual. Women are too. I've had plenty of women, my wife being one of them, tell me she's a very visual person. And so for both men and women, we talk about fornication or adultery. The way you dress, the way you act, has an impact on people around you, whether you want it to or not. It's a big lie to say, oh, these girls or these guys should be able to wear whatever they want, and no one should have any problem with it. And if you're aroused to bad feelings, well, that's your problem. Now, that being true, would we say in general that it is more fair that women desire affection more than men? Maybe I'm just going off of my own experience in my own relationship, but my wife wants affection more so than I need that type of affection. And we saw that. We looked at length at Leah. And what did Leah so crave that affection? That she tried to do whatever she could. She thought having children would bring that relationship with Jacob. Kelly. You're right. I'm not making any blanket statements. He said, I wouldn't make a blanket statement. And I'm not trying to. And if that's the impression I give, I'm sorry. I'm saying in general, sometimes we see this. But you're right. Men need affection too, maybe just in a different way. And we talked about the different love languages that people can use to express that type of affection. I guess in my terms, I might say I need that emotional support. I guess that's the same as affection. It's just in a different terminology. I definitely appreciate and need that support that Jennifer constantly provides to me. And that's not too different from affection. Now, we can say all of this and talk about all of this, but how do I want to phrase this? You have a competitor. So we can talk about a healthy sexual relationship between a husband and a wife. And if you choose not to do so, that doesn't mean that there aren't consequences, because there's somebody else out there that's vying for the attention of your husband or your wife in that manner. So look over in Proverbs chapter 7. I'm going to start in verse 10. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows, so I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry. colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home on the appointed day. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost his life. So, if you look at verse 18, it uses the word love. Is this a good love? Is this a caring love? Is this the way that our society uses the word love a lot of times? Kelly?
No to all your questions. However, I think one of the things that's worthy of noting, and this is pretty typical of the situations I've been through, that when an affair starts, it usually doesn't start there. It usually starts with an emotional connection that happens with someone that they become close friends with. That affection that develops into an attraction. And then in cases I've heard, at least, while this is certainly a very good, this is not a typical sense that it can't happen. In many cases, those sexual affairs begin with an emotional attachment to someone outside of marriage.
And they do so in the absence of it at home. Right? But I would say, this is the way that our society uses the word love. If you look in most media, songs, movies, we talked about the word love being equal to sex. It doesn't have any care behind it at all. I mean, I could have picked song title after song title after song title. I'm sure each of you can think of songs where the word love equals sex does not equal caring love. In fact, I would guess that it may be the majority. So, what does this woman use to entice this man? Speech is one, right? The way she dresses. Verse 13. She kissed him. Right. Appealing to his ego, right? She's aggressive. She is out there looking. She's prowling. It says she's lurking. David. Right, she's she even appeals to religious devotion. I mean, how messed up is that? Today I paid my vows. We share this common belief. Look, I'm this good person. And yet, as David says, she's just oozing sexuality with everything she's doing, with everything she's saying, with everything she's done. Do people like to talk about themselves? Do they like to be doted on? Like Rod was saying, she made this all about him. If you're not getting that type of affection or that type of support at home, people crave that. I think this speaks definitely to what Kelly was talking about. Many of us have probably known of affairs that didn't start with the harlot in the street. It started at work or at school or wherever it may have been. And it was innocent to start with. I don't know about you guys. Jennifer and I have a rule. Neither one of us go anywhere with just a single person of the opposite sex. I have a coworker. She's young. She's in her mid-20s. She couldn't understand why this particular engineer would not meet her for lunch. It's a working relationship. And so I just told her, and I said, this may be what it is, because he would skirt it around, or he would always try to make it a group. And I said, I don't know this guy. I said, but I can tell you my personal rule, and it's nothing personal to you. I would not go to lunch with you by myself. And you say, well, that's ridiculous. You're just going to have lunch. That's how things start. That's how they start. And she actually took it really well. And I think that's what it was, because she was able to go with a group, even though that wasn't what she was trying to do in the beginning. And she was able to have that conversation about work, because while it was truly innocent, I believe this guy was trying to guard his heart and his relationship. And so you may not have that rule, or you may think that that's a little bit too far, but it has worked for us. She also, in this passage, uses the idea of impunity. My husband's gone for a long trip. Presenting circumstances that will make the access of this sexual relationship easier, right? And that's what people end up doing. They find ways, because nobody wants to get caught. And the next thing you know, people are doing things to make this relationship available. And that's how people end up sneaking around and having these affairs and encounters, by making sure that they have availability to it. And so in this passage, the harlot definitely is making sure that the situation is plausible. This can happen. We're not in any danger. My husband's gone. Now, we know that this woman desired a relationship that was unlawful and impure. We all agree on that, right? Did she know how to get what she wanted? Did she know how to get what she wanted? I mean, you can look at this passage and all the things that she did. Was she successful? Yeah.
Dumb.
Okay. Men are dumb. Right? Yes. Well, and if you keep reading, because we were going to read the rest of it, but thank you. Her house is the way to hell. Is that pretty blunt? But here's the thing. Christian or not, and definitely for Christians, when people start going down this road, do they know it's wrong? They know it's wrong. I don't think there's anyone out there that, when they start going down this road, don't understand that these are the wrong actions to take. Did this guy know it was wrong? Absolutely, he knew it was wrong. But it happens over and over and over again. So, looking at not the right or wrong of what this woman did, her methods are effective. Now, how can we apply that within a God-ordained relationship? Women and men, are you using your dress, your conduct, sensuality, appealing to the instincts that God gave us? Are you employing these methods to ensure you have a healthy relationship within your marriage? Because other people are. This woman did. Inherently, there's nothing wrong with the methods that she employed. If she had employed them with her husband, that would have been great. So again, the idea of sex being dirty or you should feel guilty. No. All of these things that this woman did, she should have employed with her husband. And every relationship is different, right? Every husband and wife have different things that instinctually appeal to them. And you as the spouse, hopefully, know them and use them. Are we spending as much time employing these type of methods as the world is trying to influence you and your spouse? Are you using this method for good, or are you allowing the worldly methods to have more of an effect? Jeff. Right. Okay. No, and that's a great point, because you're right. You can go throughout history, and we talk about the idea that we know that affairs or fornication or adultery are wrong, and yet history is littered with men and women who have gone down this path, and what they've been willing to give up, like you said, kingdoms. The fates of nations have been determined so many times on sex. And I would argue, just like we talked about at the beginning of the class, it is the most employed tool in advertising because it works. They wouldn't use it if it didn't work. So we know that we need to protect what God created that should be sexual joy in the marriage. And so we'll just list the six sexual practices that God forbids. He forbids sex outside of marriage, be it adultery or fornication. Sex with a member of the same sex, homosexuality, is forbidden. Sex with a member of your family, incest, forbidden. Sex with animals, bestiality, is forbidden. It's gross, but unfortunately there people in our society, and as standards continue to loosen, unfortunately, heard more about it. He also forbids sex fantasies or desires for someone other than your spouse. Pornography, huge problem in our society. You may not be committing the physical act, but fantasizing about other partners is forbidden. And sex that finds pleasure in pain or violence. Obviously, any sort of rape or violence within sex is forbidden. I say all these things, and yet the things I've just said are prevalent in our society. You list them out in bullet form, it sounds so obvious and so simple. And yet, it's everywhere in our society. And unfortunately, with the advent of the internet, easy access. Virtually anyone has access to everything that I just mentioned. And so when you're inundated with this type of attitudes and prevalence and misuse of sex, I don't think that it is improper to say that it can have an effect on you that you see sex as dirty. Which is very unfortunate, because that's not how God intended it to be. It may be difficult, but we as Christians must try to focus our attitudes to ensure that we are employing healthy attitudes towards sex, married or unmarried. Have you ever given someone a gift and then you wanted to see them enjoy it? I mean, you typically, I mean, this is the time of year, right? We're buying gifts for people, family, friends. Do you buy something that you don't care if you think they're going to like it or not? No, everybody's, especially if it's someone you're really close to, trying to find something for Jennifer that I know she wants, that I know she likes, that I know she's going to use. We spend so much time buying gifts. And then what is the gratification we get out of it? Is we see that person enjoying it, right? Now, if you give someone a gift and that person mistreats it, doesn't care about it, does that make you feel good? Or does that make you feel bad? God gave mankind a gift. And it is good. Unfortunately, what he is seeing is mankind abuse and misuse that gift. And it makes him angry. And it makes him sad. The question is, what are you doing with the gift that God gave us? Are you using it properly? Are you enjoying it as he intended? As Jeff said, there is power in sex. It is a unique instinct within mankind. It is unique and it is peculiar, and God gave it to you as a gift. Sex between a husband and a wife should be awesome, not awful. And yet, as we talked about at the beginning of this lesson, and especially in our society today, you're not going to find sexual problems in the relationship listed on most divorce decrees. But, as we also discussed, it's usually one of the top reasons. And these types of problems lead to all sorts of other types of problems. I will share a story from someone else, but that's okay, I'm stealing it. When husbands and wives have problems, one of the first things that this elder asks is, are you intimate? And that may not even be what's for discussion. It may be over here, finances or children or whatever it may be. But the question is, how is your sexual relationship with your partner? Because if it's not good, it creates so many other problems. And conversely, if you do have a good sexual relationship with your spouse, it covers a multitude of other issues when you feel that closeness and that intimacy with your husband or with your wife. So just to conclude, each couple should understand that satisfying sex is not just about you and your spouse. It's not just about affair-proofing your marriage. It is about reflecting and pleasing the ultimate engineer, the God who thought it all up in the first place. For a married Christian, there should be no greater joy. I'm done. And we have 5 minutes left. Does anybody have any comments that they would like to share? I know this has not been a typical topic of conversation. And I appreciate what appears to be a very attentive and listening audience. And I hope that you understand that this is something that God talks about and we should be talking about, because the world is talking about it. And if we don't review and focus on what God's plans are for the sexual relationship, all you're going to get is the negative. That's all you're going to get. And so we need classes like this. We need to talk about it. When we're talking about the husband and wife, it's a huge part of your marriage. And so we should talk about what God intends for it. All right. Thank you very much. We'll end there.